should start. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the May 17th, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please stand with me while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can we have the roll call, please? Rose.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have quorum. Reminder to please silence your cell phones. And if we have an emergency, the exits are in the back of the room to my right and in the front of the room to my left. And please don't use the elevator if there is a fire. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. Very pleased to have a proclamation tonight coming from and for our Office for the Aging. Maybe we could ask Lisa Holmes to come up to the podium while I read it. Whereas Tompkins County is home to over 16,000 citizens age 60 and over who deserve recognition for their contributions to our community, and whereas Tompkins County recognizes that older adults are trailblazers, advocating for themselves, their peers, and their communities, paving the way for future generations. And whereas Tompkins County is committed to raising awareness about issues facing older adults and helping all individuals to thrive in communities of their choice for as long as possible. And whereas we appreciate the value of inclusion and support in helping people to age in place and benefit from community life. And whereas we can provide opportunities to enrich the lives of individuals of all ages by promoting and engaging in activity, wellness, and social involvement, emphasizing home and community-based services that support independent living, ensuring that community members can benefit from the contributions and experience of older adults. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2016 as Older Americans Month in Tompkins County and urge every resident to take time this month to acknowledge older adults as powerful and vital individuals who greatly contribute to our community. And I'm going to give this to Lisa Holmes, who's our director of our County Office for the Aging.
All right.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you to the legislature for all of the support that you show the older adults in our community and the support of the services of the Office for the Aging. I just wanted to say we recognize two outstanding volunteers during Older Americans Month, Nancy Iztok and Lucy Brown. And Lucy Brown and I had the privilege of attending Senior Citizens Day in Albany in May, which was a wonderful event where older adults from across the state receive recognition on a statewide basis. And our office was also recognized by our state association, the Office for the Aging, and in the Assembly and Senate with the first annual Innovations in Volunteering Award for our Project CARE program in which we partner with Cornell University and Ithaca College students to provide friendly visiting to older adults in their homes. We work with them and over 100 students who do the volunteering every week for all year long. So it's a wonderful program. We live in a wonderful community with lots of intergenerational programming and lots of engagement, and just very, very lucky to be here in Tompkins County. Thank you very much for this recognition.
Just a reminder to anyone who might want to speak on privilege of the floor. We'll be getting to that in a few minutes. If you'd like to speak, please hand up a blue card. They're in the back of the room. We're going to have some presentations tonight. We're going to start something that we think we've probably been remiss in not doing. It's sort of a bittersweet kind of presentation because we're going to recognize folks that have been with us for a long time in our county, but who now are going to be leaving to retire, which we think that's pretty nice that they're going to get to do that. But their services have been a great benefit to the people of our county. I'm going to call up, I think, Barbara Ekstrom from Solid Waste. We have a couple of presentations. Let me just read them while I'm at a microphone, and maybe they would come up if they're here. Celia Greer and Marcus Catone.
Does this mean Barbara's retiring? Or
I'm sorry?
You're not. Are you retiring?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We've got these nice presentations. Celia, congratulations. Marcus, congratulations. Thank you.
Can I? Yeah, let me say a couple of words. In the audience today are some of the other members of our Solid Waste Division team. You will notice that some of them are, well, all of them, including Jeff, are on the younger side. And what I'll say is, Seal and Mark, I've been here for 27 years, and Seal and Mark have been our frontline people. So even when we were fighting with the garbage haulers, we were trying to site a landfill, and there were a lot of people that were not happy with us, Seal and Mark have been the voice of the Solid Waste Division for many years, and they have great sense of humor. They have great intellect. I even have a book writer in the audience. They have wonderful families and grandchildren, and they've been with us for a long time and have taken a lot. But I know that both of them have received a lot of joy from working in a service-oriented, governmental type job. And we've already had, they actually retired a few weeks ago, each of them, but we've all gone through some grief in loss of these two particular wonderful people. I am happy to say that we've been able to kind of tide them over with replacement, and we are just, you know, we'll be seeing them. We do throw a lot of parties. I think some of you know that. And we celebrate birthdays for everybody. And we also celebrate changes in season and who knows whatever else. But what I can tell you is that I'm sure that they'll join us when they can. But they have pretty busy lives now. From what I understand, they have to keep a pretty strong calendar. So, again, grateful forever. Thank you very much.
Rick Snyder, do you want to come up to the podium? And we'd like to present an award to Helen Beach. Please come up.
I'm sure many of you know Helen Beach. She's been here for 34 years. Is that correct? And Helen's been the treasury manager. Her actual title was finance and budget manager, but over the years, she was really my right-hand person and assistant in the treasury department, dealing with all the foreclosures and tax issues. And what Helen has brought helped make me very comfortable in coming to Ithaca and Tompkins County, because I knew I had two really key division heads that could handle just about anything that was thrown at those two divisions. And everything ran smoothly for the last 3 years, yes, 3 years that I've been here, and Helen's responsible for building a team, bringing a lot of institutional knowledge to the job. We will sorely miss her, as we told her that on her retirement party that we had back in April. Some of you came to wish her well. What I really appreciate is that she's sticking around until about the end of August to help train Melanie Merriman, who is going to be the new division head or manager of that operation. So I would ask you to get to know Melanie and get used to having her around as Helen tries to impart some of that knowledge that she's attained over the years. I've had basically no staff changes for the first 3 years that I was here that I was very grateful for. A very solid staff, a very reputable staff, a staff that could be relied upon. And as you all know, I've said it many times and I'll say it again, I have 7 out of the 11 positions on my staff that are all going to be changing this year, either due to retirements or various transitions. So it's going to be a real change up in the finance department this year as we're interviewing new folks and promoting some other folks. I certainly appreciate what Helen has done because she's been a rock. She's been very stable. She's dealt with some of the hardest issues that we have to deal with when it comes to foreclosures and it comes to people who can't pay taxes. You really have to develop a customer service attitude that helps each and every individual, but at the same time, we have to take care of the interests of the county. And Helen's done an admirable job in all of that. And so I just encourage her to have a very wonderful retirement as she takes care and helps bring up that 2-year-old grandchild that she's going to be spending an awful lot of her time with. Helen, would you like to say anything at all? No, that's Helen. But just know that as we say goodbye to Helen, I know that she'll always be around to help us out to raise up the new team that we're raising up here. So, Helen, thank you very much, and God bless.
Thank you. Rick Snyder, of course, is our director of finance. Is Carmen Hockett here tonight? We have one other certificate of appreciation to Carmen Hockett from the probation department, and we'll make sure that the certificate is presented at the appropriate time. I have two other certificates that I want to thank you all for coming from Solid Waste and other departments. We appreciate it. We have two other certificates. Jim Dennis, could you come up? Jim Dennis, can you come up?
Am I retiring?
You didn't know that.
Is there money involved?
This is a certificate of appreciation awarded to James Dennis, in recognition of 10 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County. Leslie McBean Claiborne, could you come up?
Say what now?
Can you come up?
I got one of these the other day.
Certificate of appreciation awarded to Leslie McBean Claiborne in recognition of 15 years of outstanding service to Tompkins. Announcement of executive sessions, recording of business and special orders. We will have an executive session tonight, and we have someone coming to meet with us in executive session. It will be about personnel matter, a particular member of our particular employee, I should say. And we hope to do that about 7:30. So let's hope that we can get our meeting done by that time so we don't have to be here till midnight. I don't think I got any blue cards for privilege of the floor. This is two meetings in a row. We haven't had any. We've been very lucky because our three-minute countdown clock is not working properly. So we dodged a bullet on that one. But we have privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see Ducks and Nugent here.
And Deborah.
I'm sorry?
Deborah Sepola Dennis.
Oh, yeah. Deborah first? Okay. Deborah Sepola Dennis from Dryden first. That's fine.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. Deborah Sepola Dennis from Dryden. Just giving you a quick update. We had a referendum on the purchasing of the Pickney Road property. Unfortunately, that did not pass. So the town board will not be moving ahead with that purchase. But there is an effort that's underway by a group of private citizens to actually try to raise the money to purchase that property. And so if you want to know more about that, let me know, and I can connect you with the right people. Our next meeting is this Thursday at 7 p.m. in the town of Dryden. Everyone is welcome to attend. And a few updates from April. Our planning board meeting last April was held at the Varna Community Center, and there were several presentations made at that meeting. It was an effort to reach out to the community of Varna. We did receive some pushback from some of the community members there about a recent housing project, so we wanted to reach out to that community and find out, you know, how they were feeling about the development in Varna and the Varna plan. So there were some presentations done for two upcoming projects there. One is a owner-occupied small home design called Tiny Timbers. Phase one, which will begin or will start the site plan review for that fairly soon. That is going to be at the corner of 366 and Freeze Road, and that's 16 units. There's also a planned unit development that is in the preliminary stages, Evergreen Townhomes, and they're looking to build 30 townhouses that are geared towards renters just outside the hamlet of Varna. We also talked quite a bit about infrastructure changes that need to be upgraded in Varna, water and sewer upgrades, because there's been a lot of repairs in that area lately. And those are slated to happen over the next 2 to 3 years. Another thing that's going on in Varna is a new liquor store just opened there, Stonewall Wine and Spirits. So it's kind of a nice area to have a liquor store between Dryden and Ithaca. We've also established a Rails to Trails Task Force. This group will be focused on obtaining easements for the trail that goes between Ithaca and Dryden. It'll have representation from each of the other boards and committees, along with five community members. And there's also a larger group called the Friends of the Trails that meets monthly. Their monthly meeting is actually tomorrow night at the DPW building in the village of Dryden. If you're interested in that any further, you can contact Bob Beck. He's sort of spearheading that at this point. Greg Sloan has resigned his position. I think I mentioned that last month. As of April 30th, he concluded his position. We have not yet chosen an appointee. It's going to be on the agenda for this Thursday's meeting. And in April, we passed a resolution asking you guys to pass a local minimum wage law establishing Tompkins County as the Tompkins County living wage as a minimum wage. So we kicked that back to you guys. We are also working with the Alternatives Federal Credit Union to reestablish a revolving loan fund for economic development in Dryden. There are two parts to this program. One is a $10,000 individual development account. These funds are made available as a one-to-one match to Dryden residents that complete financial literacy and business development classes. It's specifically directed towards people that might not otherwise be able to get funding. The second part is a revolving loan fund that we have $163,000 from a community development block grant from a few years ago, and we are now renegotiating that and reallocating that to businesses in Dryden that might need financing. Dan Lamb is spearheading that effort, and we hope to have that up and going in the next month. We're also continuing to work on consolidating our water and sewer districts in an effort to reduce our administrative cost and cut our budget. Any questions?
Carol?
Can you just tell me exactly where the Pinckney property is?
Right. So it's right across from NYSEG. So if you're going down 13 in the big NYSEG building, there is a Pinckney Road is right across from there. You go down about a half a mile, maybe not even a half a mile, and it's a parcel of land that's right up against Fall Creek. Do you know where Campbell Meadows is?
No.
No. That's a park down there. It's really close to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Will?
Really good report. I'm amazed at the amount that you folks are doing. I was curious about this tiny houses, the tiny timbers or whatever. Are these rental or?
No, they're meant to be owner-occupied homes.
How tiny are they?
They're the largest one is about 800 square feet. And they're one-bedroom and studio homes. And they're going to be sort of like a homeowners association. So it'll be shared space and with parking area and green space. But it is meant to be owner-occupied. That's part of the covenants of the homeowners association.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Deborah,
right.
Thank you.
Thanks
for coming to our meeting. Tuckson from the City Council.
Good evening. Duck from Second Ward City Council. Speaking of 800 square feet, on our docket for June is what to do with 401 Lake Street, which is a small house on the other side of the bridge from Ithaca Falls, so we can sell it and keep it on tax rolls and keep that unit of housing, or we can demolish it and keep it as parkland or a natural area. And so if you have opinions on that, feel free to send them to us. So Tioga Street, I think George talked about this last time, but it's a done deal now. BPW voted 3-2 to put Sharrows in and do traffic calming, preserving the parking there. The Planning and Economic Development Committee got an update on dredging from Lisa Nicholas, one of our planners. So right now, the next thing is to design and build the dewatering facility that's going to be behind Walmart. And an optimistic estimate for that happening would be the end of 2017, with dredging to begin in 2018. And again, that's kind of optimistic. So we'll see what happens there. I'm going to write up. We got a lot of information on that, so I'll write that up on my website, IthacaSecondWard.org. Chainworks. So the Chainworks environmental impact statement, public comment on that EIS. Was extended 10 days to May 25th, so comments are due next week. We joined the county in lobbying about property taxes on resale restricted homes. We had a conversation at the last planning meeting about energy use requirements with CTAP. So our sustainability coordinator is recommending for the higher abatement 40% below the new New York State building standards. But I think we all pretty much agree that this should be done at the IDA county level and not a city-specific requirement. These are just a small sample of what we're up to. But we have two bird issues. We passed a waterfowl feeding ban at our parks. So don't feed the geese at Stewart Park. And next, in June, we will be voting on backyard chickens. So again, if you are a city rep and have strong opinions, let me know.
I didn't hear the last thing you said.
Backyard chickens, we are voting on whether to approve them in June.
Well, you folks have been busy. That's quite a full report. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, I think it would be good to mention that Unchained Properties has a storefront along the Commons, and you can go in there, I assume during the week primarily, although I was in there on a Saturday, and see drawings up on the wall models of what some potential that it could look like, plans to date, the entire, I don't know how thick stack of environmental materials, and oh boy, they had a TV in there with other stuff on it as well. And boy, Dave Lubin and his team, extensive team at Unchained Properties, have really done an incredible amount of work in both developing potential plans, figuring out how this could work, but also ensuring, and I think it's in mutual interest for both this developer and the community to make sure that he isn't left hanging the bag, holding the bag with any potential additional toxic cleanup of pollution at that site. And so it's been a good series of meetings with the nearby community on South Hill, but also and a very strong intent to continue working with the community and realize that we're on the same page. It's a huge document. It is so extensive that it's hard for even a professional, let alone a layperson, to get to wrap our heads around it. And an idea has been floated to make sure that we put in place a community advisory group. It is an official Superfund advisory council committee that's been in place in the past. It was ended, we know, when there was pollution on South Hill before, but that might be a really good mechanism to make sure that the lines of communication stay open and that there's ultimately community support to move forward with this project after Mr. Lubin and his team go through what they already have gone through and what they will go through in addition over the next 20 years as they roll out various phases of this. But boy, my hat is off to them and to the city and the town for tackling this all together.
Yeah, so if you want a layperson overview of the EIS, the blog has an unwieldy name, but Ithacating in Cornell Heights. It's my favorite Ithaca development blog. They have a two-part, Brian Crandall has a two-part massive posts on just doing an overview of that. So if you don't want to read through the 442 main pages, never mind the tens of thousands of supplementary material, then just go to that. Ithacating in Cornell Heights.
Anything else? Martha.
Hi, Doug. We have we've had some conversation a little bit lately about the RFP for Stewart Park. So I know Joe copied us on a message to Liz Vance, and Dan Klein was involved. And I just want to say I hope that there's a real – I don't know if you're involved in this at all, but we are – we, as a board, we need to be sort of really, I think, I will say cautious about getting involved in this and what it means. So I know that there's conversation that's going to be setting up, sort of due process here, and I just want to make sure everybody understands we're not, it's not full steam ahead at this point, and we want to make sure we have a thoughtful conversation here. So.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
Anyone else? Thank you for coming over and helping us. That's great. Privilege of the floor for legislators. I assume no one wants to talk tonight. Is that right? Martha, you always fool me. Go ahead.
I wanted to bring up something that sort of made you aware by email, but just to bring it up in person, because it's a state issue that's very upsetting. It has to do with public defense and bearing the costs. As you know, we are counties pay a significant amount of money, most of the cost of supporting attorneys for people who can't afford them, and it's appropriate that we have a share, but my understanding is that, as with Medicaid, we have a far bigger share at the local level than other states require. There is the Hurl Herring settlement you may have heard about that has to do with providing adequate public defense in four or five counties around the state, five counties. Part of that settlement were new guidelines that were announced in April. And this is decided by the court. So these are set at the moment to go into place in October 1st. And those guidelines would simply require the following, that anybody with instead of 125% of poverty being eligible for assigned counsel paid by the taxpayer, it would be 250% of poverty. Another change would be that spousal income is not to be counted in that calculation. So, for example, you know, any of us here, if our only income is our legislative salary, we qualify no matter how much our spouses might make. We also, you know, a defendant is also allowed to count their dependents fully in that calculation, even if there is a spouse or partner that's supporting those defendants, so those dependents. So your kids are counted. Your spousal income is not counted. Parental income is not counted. So 29,000 students who live in this county, whose parents may be very well qualified to pay for an attorney, I will say if, but when, they are charged with a DWI, for example, their parents' income is not counted. We, the taxpayers, will be paying for their attorneys. Julia Hughes from our assigned counsel office went back to the 2015 records and looked at the 300 people who applied for counsel and were denied because of their income limits. Out of the 300, 156 would have been granted paid counsel with the new guidelines. Now, that's just right now for criminal court. There's also a concern and an expectation. This will probably also be applied to family court, which will cause those numbers to balloon even further. We are also concerned that a lot of people don't even apply for counsel now because they think, well, I make too much. I won't get a lawyer. We expect there will be many more people apply. So beyond that 300 who were denied last year, that number would increase further. So staff is working on their projection of what the actual costs might be. Now, that would be one thing. But then there's also, on the other side, the DeFrancisco Fahey bill that is proposing to take over all state costs for assigned counsel. And I think it's a four-year phase-in, Joe. That's going nowhere fast, apparently, in the legislature. So it's one thing to fail to take over the mandates that they've already put in our laps. It's also another thing. They've also passed a new bill that says no unfunded mandates. They really did. They, you know, NYSEC put this on their website. A new bill passed out of the Senate, no unfunded mandates. And now we're going to have this imposed by the courts. And if they, at this point, really can't decide to take over this new exploding cost, I don't know why we're even here. So I called Steve Aquario at NYSEC. NYSEC has written a letter to the Office of Indigent Legal Services. Their pitch is, look, can you at least delay this implementation till April 1st so that it can be considered under the next state budget? And they suggested a few other tweaks to it. So that's fine. I'm glad that NYSEC took that position. I don't know if that'll help. But the issue that the DeFrancisco bill is not apparently moving is very, very upsetting. So I I did talk to Senator Tom O'Mara at the TCAD annual meeting last week, and he said he is a co-sponsor on that bill. I said, so are you pushing it? And he said, yeah, I'm pushing it. Okay. So I guess I think Julia's coming to public safety on Thursday. It's not on the agenda at this point, but I think she would like to talk about this further at the committee meeting. But I'd be happy to, you know, call Barbara Lifton and make other calls, but I just wanted to raise that here and let people know that's in your email inbox, but in case you didn't wade through it, that's what that is. So this is probably at the moment a pretty big hit. Would you agree, Joe? That would start in October.
We in the retreat draft, if you want to call it that, we put an extra $100,000 in assigned counsel in anticipation of this. I think Julia's belief, and Lance's as well, is there'll be an impact in the first year that could actually get much larger in the second year as additional knowledge becomes known about, additional knowledge is made aware of who is entitled to counsel. So it could be a two-step that gets us up to a higher level. Yeah.
And she's concerned, Julia's concerned that not just more people will need attorneys. The assigned counsel panel is already overworked and, you know, they don't have enough attorneys. And she's worried if you bring another 300 or X number of people, they're going to need more staff to manage the panel and manage the cases. So there's the cost for the attorneys and there's the cost for staff that we'll be looking at.
So we are on the privilege of the floor. Carol, you look quizzical. Did you have a question for Martha?
No, I wanted to say.
Okay, I've got Jim ahead of you.
Okay.
I need to apologize a little bit to all of you. You can see how well I like surprises in getting the 10-year certificate. I appreciate the effort of the chair and Kathy Covert to give me this. Time passes so quickly when you're having fun. So, again, thank you very much for the 10-year certificate.
You're more than welcome. Carol.
Yeah, so I just wanted to comment on what Martha just raised. I'm concerned about this as well, and I did wade through the materials you sent, and I appreciated your sending them. I had one concern about them, that if we're going to weigh in, and as the committee talks about it, I'll review when the committee meets and see whether I can come, but that we think about distinguishing the point about the level of income that would entitle one to assistance for an attorney from the other points in there. I mean, in this community, to offer legal assistance to kids who are still being supported by their parents, just so that they won't have their parents notified that they've been arrested for something, is just insanity. And there were some of the other things I agreed with as well, but I forget what percentage of poverty level change was being made, but it did strike me that the point that if you're at that percentage, you should be able to afford an attorney, I didn't agree with. It was it's awfully low.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I didn't mean
it's an
that.
Awfully low threshold. Well, in some of the materials, maybe from NYSAC, they cited that if you're at that percentage of poverty level, you ought to be able to afford your own attorney. And the fact is, if you're at that level, you're just barely making ends meet. The report about the spousal income, I would assume that it's a more complicated question, that you have to find some way to distinguish those cases in which the spouses are likely to be on the same page on their legal matters from those where they might not be. If it's a matter that a spouse wouldn't support you in whatever legal matter you've got. So,
I saw the proposed form, and spousal income is not even on there. You know, there's nowhere even to put your spouse's income on the application.
Let's not.
Anyway, I that's just my thoughts on the points that you raised, and I appreciated your raising them, and I hope that we do weigh in, particularly on the who would be entitled, and particularly if they are young folks who are currently being supported at very high levels by family members, or of any age, but supported at very high levels by family members.
Others who'd like to speak? Peter Stein, then Dooley Kiefer.
I was away for 2 weeks on a vacation, and I would like to talk about it a little bit because I saw a couple of really interesting things. So my wife and I went to a place, went to two cities, which were the two major cities in what used to be called the Holy Roman Empire before 1918. And the two cities were Vienna and Prague. And in 1918, after the end of the First World War, the Holy Roman Empire was just chopped into pieces and sent around to other places and completely changed the map of southeastern Europe, southwestern Europe. But it was very interesting. In Vienna, the thing that really I found amazing was that Vienna had, or what's called Austria now, had decided after the end of World War II that it was going to eliminate poverty. And it made a firm decision to do that. And as near as I could see, it was successful. I was reminded of the fact that Franklin Roosevelt, in his first speech as president, started out by saying, "One-third of this nation is ill-housed, ill-fed, and ill..." What's the other one? And ill-clothed. And this country decided that that was not the right way to do things. And as I say, as near as we could see, it was successful. That when you walk through the streets, you didn't see poor people. You didn't see the sort of thing you see when you walk through any of the streets that I know of in large cities in America. And they said that there are no beggars. And they said everybody has a reasonable amount of money to live a decent life. And they went through a period of designing low-cost housing, and the low-cost housing that I saw was nothing like the low-cost housing I've seen in various places. There was one thing that stood out, the biggest building I ever saw in my life, bigger than the Pentagon, I'm sure, was called the Karl Marx Center. And the Karl Marx Center was a series of apartments, a huge series of apartments, that people who did not have enough money to go to an ordinary apartment that is privately rented out lived there. I kept looking for it. I couldn't believe that this was the case. Now, there's one thing, there was no diversity there. I mean, there was no racial diversity that I could see any place. But I certainly did not see the diversity in income that you see every place in America. It looked to me like one of the most successful social pieces of engineering I've ever seen in my life. And cab drivers know all about it, and they tell you about it. It's very interesting. So that was number one. And number two, the second largest city in the second largest city in what was the Holy Roman Empire. It was at Prague. It's a beautiful city. You may know it as what used to be in Czechoslovakia that got changed to the Czech Republic. And that city was also a very modern city. But I had one particular incident. There was a great deal of discussion. Irene and I watched TV at night, and we heard about two things. One was Trump, and the other was North Carolina. That was what was talked about on TV. And I was in a hotel that we went out to dinner, and I asked them where the bathroom was. And so they directed me to go down this corridor and then turn right and go to another corridor, and I did that. I went down there, and there were two doors, and they had no labels on them, none of the usual labels that distinguish between males and females. And so I wondered what to do, so I just went and opened one of the doors. And when I looked in, I thought, what is this? There were three sinks in it. Three sinks, and each sink had a little ledge where you could put cosmetics or whatever, soap or whatever you needed. But there was no bathroom, okay? So then I went and opened the other door. And the other door looked like the following. It was a cubicle. There were three cubicles that ran from the ground to the ceiling. And there were no spaces between the cubicles. So it's like three vertical rooms. And they had a door that you could open them up. And I actually opened up one of those doors. And there was, of course, on the inside a lock. And that was it. And I thought, my God, this is the solution to the North Carolina problem. Nobody knows what I'm talking about?
It's a little confusing.
Huh?
You're saying they're just stalls that were locked?
No, the stalls were open. But so, you know, a male and a female, there's complete privacy. You go into use the bathroom, one of these three bathrooms, and then you come out and you wash up your hands and do whatever cosmetics you want to do. And there's absolutely no reason in the world to separate the men and the males and the females from there. So I thought that was genius. That's the end of my comments.
Thank you, Peter. Dooley Kiefer.
I don't have a story. I have a question for Martha. These various benefits that Albany is putting out periodically seem almost to me designed to make us vote in favor of a constitutional convention. Do you think that's possible? What's going on?
This particular thing, I would assume, has nothing to do with, you know, nobody would be thinking about that. But
it's the only way we can probably bring all this under control.
Yeah, potentially.
Anyone else?
Oh, school district election. Just that people haven't voted yet till 9 o'clock. Peter's going to run out now. school board elections all the districts, all the districts in the state, the polls are open until 9 o'clock. So I guess I don't know where there are contested board elections. Dryden School District has seven people running for three seats, so that's certainly hotly contested. So people are voting on budgets as well as some propositions as well as seats on boards. So.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to remind folks that by the time this body meets again, it would have been the first weekend in June, and we would have had well over, 15,000 people descend upon the city of Ithaca and Tompkins County for our annual Ithaca Festival. So please be reminded, June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, I believe, are the days for the Ithaca Festival. This year, June 4th, we are having something unique at GIAC in that we are joining with the Ithaca Festival for the GIAC Festival, so we'll be a part of it, similar to how the First Peoples Festival is a part of the Apple Harvest Festival. So we encourage you to get your buttons, show your Ithaca pride, woohoo, and come on down and enjoy the festival. The third is the parade. It's not Thursday anymore. It's on Friday, then Saturday and Sunday, all within the same space of downtown Ithaca, the Commons, and extends all the way up Court Street around where GIAC is located. So get in the party mood, and we'll see you out there.
Great. Will?
Thank you. Just to add a little bit to Martha, I voted for the school board today. Thank you for the reminder. It was a little bit disturbing, though, to realize that in the city of Ithaca, there were three candidates for four open slots. Yes. And I was reminded of how dedicated it and what incredibly important work it is to be on that board, and there is absolutely no pay and a lot of grief. So I don't know how they'll fill that forth. But there is also, of course, reasons to vote because there is a bond issue and a budget. So thank you for the reminder.
Anna Kellis.
I just wanted to bring up two events. They're both unfortunately happening at the same time tomorrow. One is a free viewing of a documentary called Catching the Sun tomorrow night at Cinemopolis, and that starts at 7 o'clock, and that is hosted by Tatum Engineering. The screening is open to the public, and there's no entry charge. Tatum Engineering is supporting the United Way of Tompkins County and will be asking for donations at the door to support opportunities, alternatives, and resources of Tompkins County OAR. Through the stories of workers and entrepreneurs in the U.S. and China, Catching the Sun is a feature-length documentary that explores the global race to a clean energy future. The film follows the hope and heartbreak of unemployed American workers seeking jobs in the solar industry, and sheds light on the path to an economically just and environmentally sustainable future. Set against the struggle to build a green economy, Catching the Sun will engage new audiences in solutions to climate change and income inequality. And you can catch a trailer online at catchingthesun.tv. So I want to encourage anyone who is free to go to that. There's also another amazing event tomorrow, which is passenger to pilot event at the Rev. I think that also starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Again, that's at the Rev. If for anybody who doesn't know, passenger to pilot is the women's entrepreneurs program that is hosted and supported by the Rev, an amazing program. So if you're inspired to go to either one of those, I encourage you to look them up.
Thank you. Anyone else? Carol?
But some of that conflicts with, for those who want to see how we can catch the sun here in Tompkins County, I hope I'm not stealing any committee thunder, that tomorrow, isn't tomorrow evening the Energy and Economic
yeah.
Development Task Force presentation? Do you have the hours and the...
Yeah, there's a public meeting at the Science Center tomorrow night, 5:30 to 7:30. Sort of the official program will start at 6 at the Science Center tomorrow night. That was going to be part of my committee report.
Okay.
I would just say to Dooley, you're absolutely right. These kind of things the state is doing and not doing tells us that we need a constitutional convention. And we're beginning to hear more and more about it out there. I watched a program with Susan Arbiter last night when she was talking about the vote in 18 months for a constitutional convention. I believe Hank DeLay is going to speak at the library. Is it tomorrow night?
I think so.
Tomorrow night? I think at 6 or 6:30. I don't have the time exactly, but I'm sure it's on the library website. For folks that are interested in this topic and learning about what a constitutional convention process is all about, we just can't continue to believe that our New York State legislature is capable of reforming itself. It just won't do it. Okay, shall we move on? For the chair's report, I will mention that Thursday night is the graduation at TC3. If anyone has not gone to one of those graduations, it's an important event. If you want to learn about the diversity and inclusion in our community, go to a TC3 graduation and see the faces of the young people. Many, probably more women than men, from all minority communities and majority communities, people from rural and from the urbanized areas of our community that are there. Our economy is about education and the institutions that we have that provide this unique way of moving our society along through college and graduation. Last week, SUNY Cortland graduated. This week, TC3 and IC will graduate. And then I think the last week in the month, Cornell University, of course, will have its graduation. They send forth people to take jobs and to develop our thinking and to move us forward in the world. They create jobs for our economy here. And we're pretty lucky that we are the beacon in a fairly difficult upstate economy with the various counties upstate that are not seeing economic growth, that we're able, because of our interdependence with our academic communities, we're able to keep our head above water, and I think that's pretty important. So come on out and see the TC3 graduation sometime. I don't have any chair's appointments tonight, so we'll move to reports by the county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike, and I just have a couple of items tonight. The first one, I think, is it could be old news for at least many of you. We did receive the state municipal restructuring grant for the police consolidation study. We received news of the award a couple of weeks ago. You recall it's a multiple-step, multiple-phase approach. A little bewildering in some ways the way it rolls out, but we do know that the first phase of that is $50,000 to support a study. So the next step will be to develop an RFP for a consultant that can help us analyze what the options are. We'll begin work on that soon with the city and our other partners. Peter Stein, chair of the Public Safety Committee, will be a part of that team that drafts the RFP. I will share that RFP with the legislature before it goes anywhere. So that's the good news is we've received the grant award. The second item on my list tonight, I just wanted to make you aware that the state's making an effort to see if it can help drive down the cost of electric vehicles, something that I think we all would like to see the county investing more in. We have a relatively small fleet of sedans in the county, probably smaller than most counties our size. I think it's about 50 vehicles that we have, cars, that we have in the fleet. And they're all gas-fired, although we have some Priuses in the fleet. And it's not an unreasonable goal to think that over the next replacement cycle, we can go from gasoline engines to electric cars over the course of the 6 or 7 years that it takes us to turn our fleet. The state's trying to help accelerate that by doing essentially for electric vehicles what Mega does for electricity in pooling demand, in reaching out to all of the component units of government in the state, all the municipalities and authorities and districts, and asking them, if the price was right, how many electric vehicles might you want to buy this year? And we're participating in that. In a non-binding way, we know that we have 5 vehicles in the mental health department that are in the budget that we haven't bought yet. We know that mental health has taken a look at the Chevy Volt. That's the likely car that would be a part of this bid. And they've found that it's okay, that it fits for their purposes, that the range, which on electric power is 53 miles, that's gasoline as well, it's okay, that it works for them. It's an issue of price, that right now we put in the 2016 budget about $16,500 per stripped-down car, per sedan. And when you dial up the web page and look at how much a Volt costs on the sticker, it's more like $32,000. Significant price difference. But again, the whole effort that the state's trying to make is to drive the cost of those electric vehicles down to something closer to what we would expect to pay for a conventional sedan. The state believes that they can bring it in at somewhere between $25,000 and $28,000. There's the possibility of another $5,000 per vehicle to drive it down a little further. So it can get relatively close to the amount of money that we put in the budget. And at that point, we have kind of a policy decision to make. Do we want to invest the extra dollars to go electric or not? So in this phase of the effort, it's really just testing the waters, seeing what happens with this bid, no harm, no foul. And when we find out what the results of that are, we will bring it back to you and talk about it. I will tell you that because of lower gas prices, our gasoline expenditures this year so far are $62,000 below where they were last year. So in a way, it's repurposing a savings to go into electric vehicles, which helps us free ourselves of some of these gas-fired engines in the future. So I just wanted you to be aware, we are gonna throw in five. It doesn't bind us to buy them. It'll be really interesting to see where this goes. And as it develops, I'll keep you informed about the outcomes.
Rich?
I assume that there's some cost savings in operation on that side with the electric vehicles over gas?
Yes. We haven't gone into those. There is, particularly if you stay within range, because, you know, the Volt at least, and everybody is assuming the Volt's the likely vehicle, the Volt has both an electric motor, but also it has a gas engine as well. If you stay within the 53 miles a day range, yeah, the cost is very low. They tell me, and I'm not a mechanic, that the maintenance costs on electric vehicles can be lower too because they are very simple engines. And we've checked, they can be maintained locally. We know that. We would train our folks how to maintain them as well. So there could be ongoing savings.
Joe, do you want to mention charging stations?
Well, we're looking at charging stations. They're not cheap. So charging stations, just to buy the equipment, it looks like about $6,000 per unit. They have two hoses, if you will, so you can charge two cars. However, in looking at that and realizing we've had a Volt in our fleet before, the airport leased one, and we didn't have a charging station. So we did a little research there, and with a conventional plug, I think it's more like a washer-dryer plug, you can charge one of these fully in a 13-hour period. So imagine mental health. They're done with the day at 5 o'clock. They plug it in. They drive away at 8 or 8:30 the next morning. You can fully charge based on a conventional kind of outlet as opposed to a charging station. So in the first instance, we may want to look at that inexpensive option. As our fleet goes electric, though, I'm sure, are going to want to invest in charging stations for a quicker charge and also offer the public the convenience of having a station that maybe they can hook into also at county buildings.
I think I got Julie and then Martha.
At the MPO meeting this afternoon, Fernando was updating the group on the electric charging station study that's going on now. And there was discussion of the incompatibility of plugs from different manufacturers, and not only different kinds of plugs, but also different levels of power that some require. So it's at some point they're going to standardize, I hope, but at the moment it's not quite as smooth as I thought it was going to be.
Martha?
I think this is great to investigate. So two questions. One is about sort of longevity of the cars. Like, do they tend to last long as what we're using now? And what's the net? I mean, if you add a significant number of cars onto our electric bills, I mean, I don't know if that's covered by...
I'd be making it up tonight if I gave you an answer. It's something that we can research as we get farther into this. I think, you know, one of the things that was a wake-up for many of us was in the task force, the Energy and Environment Task Force, or Energy and Economic Development Task Force, how much of an impact transportation has. We always look at our building systems, how we heat them, how we power them, forget about sometimes the cars. So to the extent that we can be kind of a lead agent in this, and I really do think fleets are where the action is going to be, That certainly has a positive impact. We will look at life cycle costs before we bring anything back to you.
Okay, anything else, Joe?
No, that's it.
Thank you. Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
Again, I want to remind people to get in their financial disclosure forms if they have not done so yet, but otherwise I have no report.
Any questions? Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
Just two topics to discuss tonight. One is the annual auction that's coming up in June for foreclosure properties. Usually around this time of the year, I make the legislature aware of what those properties are and what's still on the list. About 3 weeks ago, I went on the auction tour, the foreclosure tour, with a number of staff people, and I live to tell about it. And that's the tour where I get to go to each and every household that hasn't paid their taxes for the year, 3 years, knock on the door, hang the notice on the door, and or talk to the people involved. And it went well this year. There was no casualties, of course, but what we did find out was in this particular year's auction, there are fewer residential properties than what we normally have. When we started the process about 6 weeks ago, we had 24 total properties, and they were about half of them were half residential, and the other half were vacant or commercial. As of now, because of redemptions and installment agreements and working with under a number of methods with these customers, we've eliminated six of those properties, so we're down to just 18. Excuse me. So that's about, for my length of time here, that's the smallest list that we've had on the foreclosure block for auction properties, at least at this point in time. So what I'd like to do to make you a little bit more aware of each and every property, since I did not bring the list along tonight, I will email you each a packet that contains a spreadsheet and a listing of each and every property so that you'll be aware, as many of you have followed this from time to time on your own, just what pieces of property are going to be auctioned in June. So I was looking forward to eliminating a couple of more. They still have opportunity to redeem these properties to the end of this month, which is just a week or so away. And I'll be bringing that list to you via email over the next couple of days. And my second and final topic is, if you turn to your red folders, we do have another month of sales tax receipts to look at for April 2016. This was a much better month, and I'm sure Joe's breathing easier. Right, Joe? Oh, no, Joe says he's not making any determination until the second and final quarter is completely distributed in that hand, and that's probably a smart thing to do. But we do want to report that on the sales tax distribution summary for April, if you look at the county section in the middle line 6 and 7, you can see that the distributions for the month of April was up 3.34% compared to last year's April. So we had a very good month. In fact, as I went back and researched over the last few years, this is the best April that Tompkins County has had on record. So we're beginning to experience a little bit of a rebound here. As the end of April, the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $9,968,895 compared to $10,040,967 in 2015. So this year-to-date column represents a decrease of $72,072 year-over-year, which is a 0.72% decrease. This is a marked improvement from the end of last month when we were still down over 2%. So as of the end of March, the year-to-date showing was we were behind by 2%. As of the end of April, it's less than 1%. So we do have a bit of improvement. Probably too early to really change any forecasting at this point in time. And Joe's right. By the time we wrap up with two more months under the belt, the second quarter, we should have a little bit better handle on where we are at 50% of the year, and that way Joe will still be able to have at his disposal good figures to work with for bringing to you the budget for 2017.
Questions for Rick?
Thank you.
Thanks for that improvement in the sales tax. Let's hope it continues.
Oh, I do have a question. Did any of the properties foreclosed have unique natural areas on them?
I don't know the answer to that. This has all gone to the planning with Tom Knight? Mm. No, is it?
Who Scott is Doyle. The
Scott Doyle, I'm sorry. It's gone to the planning department, and they're making their determination right now. So I don't know as we sit here right now if any of these are being going to be brought to either the GL committee or the budget committee, but I know that he has intended to list this at their next meeting. So if there are any properties, it should be on your next agenda for GL meeting.
Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Martha Robertson.
I would like to pull Resolution E, the William George bond issue.
That was withdrawn. Anyone else? Let's go to our consent agenda. We have some advisory board appointments out of the Government Operations Committee to the Library Board of Trustees, Luca Maurer, and Don Trotter. Out of the Health and Human Services Committee, to the Youth Services Board, Patty Van de Bogart. And there's one resolution on consent out of Government Operations, approval of bylaws, Tompkins County Public Library. That's ID 6292. Carol?
I'm moving it.
Oh, you're moving the consent agenda.
Yeah.
All right.
And the appointments.
Let me catch...
Second.
Oh, you're second. All right, you're getting ahead of me here. All right. On the consent agenda, all those in it's been moved by Carol, seconded by Dooley. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. Thank you, Carol. Let's go to standing committees. Let's start with the Health and Human Services Committee. Leslie Bean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Health and Human Services Committee met yesterday at our new date, which is the third Monday of the month. We met at a little bit of an unusual time at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, but going forward, our regular meeting time will be third Monday at 3:30 right here in this room. We spent the majority of our time in Health and Human Services hearing about and discussing the heroin issue in our county, and that's happening throughout our nation, as a matter of fact. Prior to me getting to that, however, I want to share some news. We were honoring some retirees today, and Lisa Holmes from the Office of the Aging brought us word that Steve Griffin, who has been with FoodNet, I think, since his inception, will be retiring at the end of the year. I'm not sure who gave him permission to retire, but he is. He's done a stellar job there, but he's letting us know that he will be leaving us. So we certainly do want to wish him well. So we went into this discussion. We had some guests with us, our district attorney, Gwen Wilkinson, and a couple of employees, Lillian and Brian, from Southern Tier AIDS program, who came and shared with us information around just what's going on with heroin in itself. This is a precursor to the conversation we hope to have pretty soon with the mayor, and I'm sure Lillian will be there again, and Gwen, around the municipal drug plan that the city of Ithaca had worked work done around and that the mayor has been presenting. It gave us an opportunity as a committee to really talk about and focus in on this one specific issue, although we know, and as members around the table and our guests indicated, that we should be looking at addiction, a much larger issue of addiction than just this one. However, we know that the surge of the ugly head of heroin is cause for alarm. We have too many people in too short a space of time dying in our county from heroin overdose. What was some of the interesting points that came out, from the folks who were presenting, we must be aware that there is a glut on the market for heroin. It is no longer heroin in its purest form, but about 15% of what our addicts are buying, or what our users are buying, I would say, is heroin. The rest of it is lethal substances that are being added to the heroin, fentanyl being the main culprit. They shared with us just some of the experiences of many of our young people, because the under 30 population, you're seeing a strong rise in the number of people under the age of 30 who are becoming users or addicted to heroin, and that is troublesome. Some of the conditions that they attribute to this and this surge in use has to do with people who have been addicted to prescription drugs that are opiates, things like oxycodone or Percocet, et cetera. And because of new regulations, you don't get that as much. Many of them are our student athletes who have chronic pain, who have injuries, sports injuries, and so they're getting these medicines for it. And because they're unable to get it in the quantities, perhaps, as they were getting previously, because of new regulations, many of them are turning to other drugs for help with the pain and for healing. And the other drug that happens to be on the market that's cheap, at now $10 as opposed to a few years ago when it was $25 for a gram when you can buy, a hit. It's now $10 on the market is heroin. And again, not heroin in its purest form, but heroin that has been cut with other things. Many of the people who are users, who are long-term users and who have been addicted, also are finding themselves at that place that it's no longer for just maintenance. Many people take, methadone, and users continue to use heroin so that they can, just get your fix and be happy and go on about your way. But people are going to that next level where they need a high. The heroin in its pure form is not giving you the high they need anymore, and so the high comes from the thing that's killing you. So it is very, very problematic for us in our community. We recognize that we didn't even scratch the surface of this problem. I sat in a meeting this morning hearing about, three deaths in our county just within the last week, if not more, and they did share some numbers with us as well from heroin overdose. And because the reporting, the state, has changed how you're reporting, similar to what we were talking about last month in terms of commercially, sexually exploited children, the reporting mechanism has changed, or what needs to report has changed, we will probably hear more about it. Because I think previously reporting in this were more around the person died from asphyxiation or from a heart attack. But now I think the state is looking for more information around what caused that, and that's what's being reported, heroin. As I speak of this, I do want to, in this moment, thank, and it's an unfortunate thank you to hand out to the parent, the mother, Lynette, of Antoine Brooks, young man who died in our community last week of a heroin overdose. And she was very forthcoming in saying, this is what it was. Let's not mask it about anything else so that we know what's occurring in our community and perhaps we can save another life. At the same time, I want to also remind people, you know, the mayor has asked, the police chief has put out on Facebook and elsewhere, that we do have a Good Samaritan law here in the city of Ithaca, that, and in Tompkins County, that if you see someone who's overdosing, you know something is going down, please call 911. Do not be afraid that you're going to get in trouble, because you will not. We'd rather the life be saved. The presenters also talked about the use of Narcan, which is, I can't remember how many. I think somebody had mentioned that they had exercised at least 17, if not more, Narcan injections within the last month, trying to bring people back from where they are. And that is just what they were able to report. But in all the meetings I've been in, I'm hearing of how much more is being administered. And for us to think about just civil service workers, our role in that, they encourage people getting trained in the use. The kits are free, being trained in the use of Narcan as a way of dealing with this issue.
Leslin?
Yes.
I have that statistic. It was 40 reversal reports as a result of getting Narcan kits.
40. 40, not 17. 40. It was, it's something I know all too well, so not eye-opening as it is a moment for us to really think about what it is we need to be doing as a county. Martha asked you a very important question of our service providers who are, and department heads who are sitting around the table, is as we come up in budget season, what do we need to be thinking about, envisioning, predicting, so that we can be setting aside resources to be able to deal with this issue. There's no longer a just say no to drugs. That is just stupid right now, and it doesn't work. And it never did work. So what else do we need to be doing to make sure that we are saving lives? It is extremely unfortunate to pick up the Ithaca Journal and see the face of another young man who I know all too well, who was arrested for for use, you know, for being in his car under the influence, heroin use again. And these are young people in our community, and we have to be really mindful of how we are supporting that. 10 to 16 deaths each year. There's been an uptick in the last 5 years, according to Frank Krupa, our mental health and public health department head. But there are other services that we administer within this county, and so it's sort of, we're trying to look at this whole wraparound approach. Things like treatment court, family treatment court, what's going on there, how do we make sure children are protected in all of this. Safe care for parenting, strengthening families, program that's happening through our Department of Social Services. So it is, you know, more of a comprehensive approach than just, you know, let's put funds towards, you know, the heroin issue. It's more than that. But it is a huge issue in our community, in our country, and so we wanted to take the time to begin to understand, you know, just barely what sort of an animal we're dealing with and what do we need to do. This conversation is going to continue. Like I said, we just had a few people. I hope that our follow-up meetings are following the presentation with the mayor, that we will have law enforcement and the folks from the hospital who probably have the best statistics that they can share with us about what they're seeing of folks coming into the emergency room, as well as those who are providing the services from CARS or Alcohol and Drug Council. We hope to bring more people to the table so we can continue to talk about this issue and not just talk, but explore more the things we've been doing now, because it's not, we've been doing stuff. I don't want anybody to believe, and that was the main purpose of some of this as well, is to hear about the things we've been doing. And how do we strengthen those things or change courses for the things we've been doing so they're much more effective? So that's some of the conversation, the bulk of our conversation yesterday, and I will look to committee members if they had any more information they wanted to add to that. That's my report. Go ahead, Paul.
All right. Sorry. I've got, thank you. That's a pretty sobering report, but I think a very, very important message for us to hear, Leslie. Thank you. Will Burbank.
Yeah. Thank you, Leslie. Leslie, you did a marvelous job of presenting what was one of the most interesting committee meetings I've ever been to. One thing that I learned, however, that I did not know, was I guess I'd been hearing that one of the big lacks in our community is a detox facility. Essentially, if you are severely addicted or whatever, you end up at the hospital. That's the closest we have, but it doesn't really set up to do that. One of the danger points are people coming out, however, of, say, our jail, where they have been deprived of their drug. They get back in the street for all kinds of reasons. They find themselves pulled back into that world, and their body chemistry has changed to the point where the drugs that they previously could use suddenly can kill them. And I don't think we haven't set up a system to basically address that. So just one of many, many things that we need to do.
And that, if I may, just, full in all transparency, that was the issue with Antoine Brooks.
Carol, then Anna.
Yeah, I also, Leslie, you did an amazing job of summarizing what was a very powerful discussion and set of presentations. It felt like we were learning a lot, it also felt like we were just barely scratching the surface, so there's going to be a lot more to talk about. I also was going to just fill in some particularly low points that I heard and a couple of rays of hope, the low point being the period in between the initial 28 to 30 day treatment that people are able to get supported to have to the initial withdrawal period that is supported, and then there's a period of several months at least between that and when people can get into a rehab program. So that's the biggest danger period for people to relapse immediately, and that just shouldn't be. We should be able to figure out ways not only to have that initial period be here in Tompkins County, but how to cover that interim period. A couple of rays of hope: the fact that the Narcan is available now in New York State without a prescription. So anybody can walk into the pharmacy and purchase this and then get trained. You can also get these free doses so that to have around, so we can potentially have more people in our county learn how to administer this and have it available. And then the other was from Patricia Terry in our Department of Social Services, having some success just in this last year with the one of the family prevention programs. So if you remember, we accepted some money that came from a foundation out in California. It was about $250,000. It's money that was from the Doris Duke Foundation that went to this other group. And they've had good success with that program, reaching out to parents and families who are have reached the stage of having their children, of not being able to have their own children in their homes. And unlike with bath salts, where parents who reached that stage weren't even responsive to that as a stimulus, we had a year where it was just a real low, where our staff couldn't believe that people didn't care enough to at least try to be able to get their children back. With the heroin addiction, people are motivated. And of the 30-some-odd people facing that situation in the last year, 20-some-odd of them, I don't have the exact numbers, but it was a good percentage. Two-thirds of them were able to, after an interim period, a temporary period of not having their children be able to live with them, were able to not have their kids placed for adoption permanently, and were able to get them back and get off of heroin. So that was a ray of hope, and I salute our staff for implementing that program.
Anna.
We need to try other things.
And I know we're all going on, and I appreciate everybody's patience with this. This was really an amazing presentation. We were lucky to have it. And I wrote copious notes, and Leslin, you covered almost everything. That was so amazing. And I also just wanted to add a few additional things to this for what it's worth. Another piece that stuck out to me was the fact that because the market is getting more competitive, the strength of the heroin that people are buying is actually also going up. So the price is half and the strength has increased. And I think the combination of those two of them is adding to that problem. And there were two documentaries that were mentioned that they suggested were great for people to watch, and I suggest that people write them down and maybe we can watch them individually. One was American Addict. The other is The House I Live In. Both were strongly recommended by the group for us to get background information and education. I was also very impressed with some of the programs that I just want to throw out that the county is doing. There's the Safe Care Program and Strengthening Families Program, both that are parenting skills model-based and that are done in the home with the families. And I was very impressed with what I heard from those programs. They are getting grants to do capacity building, and that's through the Department of Youth Services. There's also the Family Treatment Court that has been very successful through DSS. So I just wanted to share that they did present, and I was very impressed with the work that they were doing. And hopefully we can get more and more information about those so that we can have a comprehensive understanding of all of the programs that can work together to address this issue, because I think if they are siloed, they will have less of an effect. So the more that we understand all the pieces and all the programs that the individual departments are doing, I think the more that we can support them in creating a comprehensive plan. The last thing that I want to mention is that Lillian Fan, who's the Assistant Director of Prevention Services and Harm Reduction, I spoke with her afterwards, and she offered to do a tour of their area, their offices, and their programs for all of the legislators, and she gave me her business cards. I'm happy to set that up. I'll send an email out to everyone, and I have her business cards for anybody who wants to follow up, and that would be a 9 o'clock-ish in the morning walkthrough, tour, and discussion presentation with them. So.
So if I may just wrap it up, Mr. Chair,
yes,
very quickly, The House I Live In, we had a viewing of that at Cinemopolis a few months ago, just prior to the presentation of the municipal drug plan, and, if we can have that happen again, it would be great. It is a very powerful movie to add. I want to make one slight adjustment, not correction, but adjustment to something, Anna, you just said about the quality, the competitiveness on the market, of course, means the quality not necessarily of the heroin, but of the high you're going to get, because it's not heroin, it's killer substances that are in what's being sold that people are getting, and it certainly is a lot of that out on the market. Last but not least, off of that issue, again, the conversation will continue, and I will let you all know if others want to join in on the conversation as we look at this even deeper and take action, not just talk about it, but take action. Last but not least, I want to share, our county administrator did share with us, and being liaison to the Tompkins Committee Action board about their plans to develop housing for homeless youth. That's in the works. I think that's Amici House is in the works. So you're, you know, really talking to public, getting, you know, more information and trying to move forward with that project, which is a very good thing for our community. So just wanted to share those things out of Health and Human Services, and I don't have any resolutions. Oh, I'm sorry. I do have to share this. At our meeting yesterday, the Community Drug Forum, the Community Coalition for Healthy Youth, which I know is headed up and chaired by our Youth Services Director, Amy Hendricks, is sponsoring, has been sponsoring the community forums on drug, prescription drug problems. This, I think, is the third forum about the opioid problem. It will continue to focus on prescription drugs. This one is happening on Thursday, May 19th, 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the library in Ulysses. And so we encourage folks to go. There's time for questions and answers. There'll be presentations. Alcohol and Drug Council there, Keogh Addiction Recovery Services, Lori B. Recovery, Trumansburg Family Health, as well as Trumansburg Police, Law Enforcement and Drop Box Disposal. They will be there to continue to talk about this issue. So people all around our county are really trying to explore what do we do about it, and we want everybody as knowledgeable as you can be and involved. So I just wanted to share that information. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslin. Let's move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. Just one correction on something you said earlier. TC3 graduation is the 26th, not this.
I'm sorry, did I say the wrong day?
Yeah, you said this Thursday.
My apologies.
So, anyway, F&I has not met since our last legislature meeting, but I do have a resolution B to move Document ID 6290, authorizing the county administrator to sell property located on the Elmira Road in Ithaca, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. Ready to vote on this? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13.
All those opposed? I think it's two opposed. It's 12 to 2. That passes.
That's my report, Mike.
Yes, that's right. There is a miscount. It's 11 to 2 because we have one person who left our meeting. Still passes. Anything else for Dave? Transportation Committee. We did meet on May 11th, and we spent most of our time talking about roads, particularly state highways. We're glad to have Fernando de Aragon from our MPO there, and we talked about the possibility of looking at some of the major arteries, such as Route 13, such as Route 96, 38, 79, the major state highways. Want to arrange a meeting either in person or via Skype with folks at DOT to talk about their plans and in the future of the state highway. We all know we have more and more traffic on the highways. We'd like to know if there are technical improvements that Fernando de Aragon talked to us about that might ease some of the congestion, such as better signalization of the lights that come into the city, for example, how we can encourage more people to use the bus. Probably we are going to need to have a real look at Route 13, a study of that road. And I think Fernando is in the process of looking what it might take and what a possible RFP to ask for a study of Route 13 would encompass. So that was part of the discussion. We did pull out the old NEST study. That's the Northeast Suburban Transportation Study that was done years ago. Don't look at me like that, Martha. Not so much for some of the more controversial things in there, such as the East Ithaca Connector, which would have taken some of the pressure off of Pine Tree Road and some of the other areas, but more there because of the forward-looking discussion that the community members particularly had with things like density, things like neighborhood traffic, traffic calming, and other things. It's not everything. We don't have to always have to reinvent the wheel, but looking at what other people have studied does make a difference. Glad to answer any questions. Martha.
I personally hope that any major investment in transportation, I would really like to see an argument made that that investment, if there's going to be public money to be had, put it into housing so that people don't have to commute from distances. I mean, I think that's the core, that's the problem. You can't build your way out of congestion. It's been proven over and over again.
Okay, I take your point. Dooley?
I was not able to attend, but I read minutes. It was in the were in the packet, and I wondered if there has been any update on the work of the Johnson School students who are looking at options for the airport.
No, we did not get that. Mike Hall was not able to attend the meeting, but at the last previous meeting, he said that he was expecting by the end of the semester to be getting some information from those students.
I thought it was May. That's why I was looking for that.
But we haven't received it yet.
Thank you.
Dave?
Yeah, to Dooley's question, I was at the Air Services Board meeting the other day, and there wasn't any discussion of further information from Johnson School.
Thanks, Dave. Let's go next to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on May 4th, and really everything that we covered, most of what we covered, is in today's resolution, so I don't really have any report, except to say that our next meeting is Wednesday, June 1st at 3:30 here in these chambers. We've got some interesting things on that agenda so far. We're going to have Rod Howe from the History Center of Tompkins County presenting some things that he is working on, some possibilities that are going to be really interesting to hear about. We might call it the future of history or the history of the future, I don't know. And also, we will be hearing from Jonathan Wood, our county attorney, but he's also the attorney for MEGA, the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance. Is that what it stands for?
Yep.
They had their annual meeting in the last few weeks, and we're going to have an update from that organization. And that is my report.
What's the date again?
Wednesday, June 1st, 3:30.
Questions for Dan? Dan, you've got some resolutions?
I do. I have Resolution C is a resolution that was conceived by our colleague here, Rich John, written by Rich and advocated by Rich, so I would ask that he would move it.
Thank you, Dan. If I could just...
Are you going to move it?
Yes, I'll move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Go ahead, Rich.
And there is a draft of a proposed amendments coming around, and I thought better to get that in front of everybody because there's a fair number of proposed changes, so we can consider those serially. I would consider them all friendly, and I anticipate there will be some more amendments as well. And, in fact, I just received one from my colleague to the left, so I know there will be more.
Which, how many pages is this handout you just gave?
Two.
Two.
As a preface, I would say that I'm somewhat skeptical where we pass resolutions telling other governmental entities how they should behave. But as Mike Lane stated, this has been a significant and ongoing problem with New York State government for decades. And it's my view that unless we very clearly state that the Tompkins County Legislature does not agree that this is how New York State government should operate and do it in a clear way, we can be criticized as just accepting the status quo. This resolution, instead of just asking New York State to pass meaningful ethics reform, which I'm sure they would tell us they have already done and done very well, we've tried to be fairly specific, and in being specific, it tends to lead to a lot of conversation, and certainly I thank Dan for his patience at the GO committee in that we got to a 5-0 vote, but it was not fast. But I thank everybody, and I thank everybody who's provided me with comments since then. And what's been handed out is a red line, and I'd like to go over what the proposals are, and then I would ask for somebody to move the changes to the resolution as an amendment. In the third whereas, after legislators, add "and a governor." So it would read, whereas over 30 New York State legislators and a governor in the past 15 years have left office because of criminal and or ethics charges. And then in the next whereas, strike the legislative branch of New York State government. So it reads within New York State government, because it is not limited to the legislative branch. In the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th, whereas, strike the beginning of that sentence all the way to jeopardizes and move it, combine it with the whereas above. So it would read, whereas the failure of the New York State Legislature to effectively act to address the root causes of the actual and perceived corruption with comprehensive and rigorous ethics reform creates the appearance that the body tolerates the misuse of the powers of office by some legislators and is willing to allow such corruption to continue unhindered and jeopardizes the foundation of trust necessary for government to operate with the, quote, consent of the governed, end quote, and presents a fundamental challenge to the legitimacy of the legislature. In the first resolved, there is a correction of a typo. That should not be capitalized. In the, let's see, I think those are the only changes on the second page. In the 5th bullet point, we would add in the first line, restructuring the Joint Commission on Public Ethics by, one, reducing the number of members and adding the language below the present 14 members to make clear that when we're asking for adding some members that it would not be above the 14. We want a smaller commission, but with some outside representation, as indicated in number 3 in that bullet point. And in the next bullet point, being the 6th on the page, restructuring the New York State Board of Elections, adding the language by expanding membership to include an odd number of commissioners, to remove the evenly divided two-party format that results in inaction due to tie votes, period, and striking the rest of the language. And then there is a correction to the spelling of the governor's name. I apologize for that one. I should know that by now. And then adding some additional assembly members, Jeffrey Klein, Andrea Stewart Cousins, to receive a copy. And Brian Kolb and James Todisco. So, if somebody wishes to move those changes.
Jim Dennis, his hand up to move it.
I would gladly move those changes.
Is there a second? Anna? On the amendments that has been offered, is there a question? Go ahead. Martha Robertson.
No, I think I got them all. I did have, I was hoping to add on page two, one, two, three, four, five, the fifth bullet about the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, that we add "and the executive branch" at the end of that. So it says granting clear authority to the commission to freely investigate and enforce ethical violations within the New York State Legislature and the executive branch. I did check about the JCOP is currently structured to include investigation and oversight of the executive branch. So that's not sort of adding any powers, but I thought it should be identified there.
Jim, is that part of your amendment?
Yes, that's fine.
Anna, is that all right with you? All right. Anything else on the amendment? Ready to vote on the amendment? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Dooley,
I'm sorry. Dooley's got her hand up. Didn't see it.
I just want to point out that an odd number is one, and I don't think we want to recommend one. This is the third bullet from the end.
Well, you're saying expanding the membership to make an odd number.
It says restructuring by expanding to include an odd number. I don't...
I believe there's four at present.
It didn't seem real clear to me.
Do you have language you'd suggest?
No. I just noticed it as you were going through it.
What if you'd strike include...
It is plural, so we do say commissioners, which by definition would be more than one.
And it's expanding from what exists. If what exists is four, then it's no less than four.
The biggest change in that one was to get rid of our suggestion of having representation from other than just Democrats and Republicans. And I still think that that is a really sound idea, so I took the time to go on the Board of Elections website and find how many enrolled members there are from various parties in our state, which membership will continue through 2017 until there's another gubernatorial election. And the Democratic Party has nearly 5.8 million enrollees. The Republican Party has 2.7 plus million. The Conservative Party has 159,000. The Green Party has 26,000. The Working Families Party has 48,000. And the Independence Party has 475,500. So the top five are Democratic, Republican, Independence, Conservative, and Working Families. And that's an interesting mix. And since most voters seem to be independent and not in parties at all anymore, it still makes sense to me to have a mixture of parties representing different points of view on the Board of Elections at the state level. So I am not happy with the change.
Martha.
Well, since you just said most, do you have a number on how many voters are unaffiliated?
It changes every year.
Ballpark.
No, I don't.
20%, roughly.
No.
20%, so I'm not good at the math. So anyway, that puts them at the third largest group, if you're looking at. Okay, anyway, I think, Julie, it's the point here is to make it an odd number. I don't think anybody's going to take what we write here and do this. I mean, so I think the point is made, and the point it's important to have the Board of Elections identified as one of the issues, but I don't think we need to settle it here. I mean, I think we need to produce something that's thoughtful and comprehensive, and thanks to Rich, we have. I mean, I think this is a great initiative, Rich. I really appreciate it, and I'm fine with the way it is.
Well, I would be surprised also if they do everything we're asking them to do. But in this instance, giving them for example, might be a reasonable thing to do. And I would move that change.
All right, I have a motion for an amendment to the amendment. What is that you want to say?
An odd number, for example, having representation from the five largest political parties in the state.
Is there a second for that? Seconded by Anna. Discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Anna, I think you had your hand first and then Rich.
I seconded because I would love to hear Rich's thoughts on this.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, Dooley. I think it would be wonderful to have the Board of Elections have a wider representation. And to Dan's point, the group that probably should be represented on the Board of Elections are the unaffiliated, the non-parties voters. And I'm not sure there's an easy way to do that. My fear is that if we accept your amendment, we are not going to have unanimity. And while I anticipate this resolution will pass, I would very much like us to have a consensus here where we have a unanimous vote. And I have heard people say that if we try to do this on this element, it's going to be problematic. So I would say let the good succeed over the perfect in this instance. Be my position.
Back to Anna on the amendment of the amendment.
Just a quick question in addition to that, Rich. What do you think of the idea of putting it as a for example, although I appreciate what you're saying and where you're coming from? I hadn't heard that as an option before.
I'm okay with it. I guess I'd like to hear from my fellow legislators if they have strong feelings one way or the other.
Carol was next.
So, I was the one who looked at this as we got together to propose these changes and thought, okay, we should definitely get in the concept of having representation by more than the two major parties. I liked that idea. But my next thought was to say, okay, what are the largest parties? And how many of them agree with my point of view, leaning more to the Democratic side and left of that, or vice versa? And I went and looked, and the list that I found, that must have been older than the one that you found, Dooley, on a quick search, looked like let's pick five, because three of those last year were more Democratic and left of and liberal leaning versus conservative. And the whole point of suggesting this ethics reform to me is that the overarching point is that we should have a bipartisan recommendation, and that this should all be handled, that the notion of ethics should be handled in a bipartisan way, at least, and preferably more than bipartisan, but certainly coming out of this group should be not along party lines. And anyway, pit number that you pick, that's what people are going to do, is go and look, well, which ones agree with my perspective? So I think that becomes very difficult. I think by saying an odd number, by definition, you're going to get some other third representation of perspective, because the two groups are going to have to agree on who that odd member out is. So I think we've achieved that by just leaving the number off.
Martha, then
no
Peter.
Longer support the concept of putting in a number.
On the amendment to the amendment, and let's see if we can't vote on it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of detail in here already. I feel like that would get people stuck on that one thing. I don't think that's helpful. By the way, the unaffiliated, if my math is right, it's about 1.84 million unaffiliated. So that's Dems 5.8, Republicans 2.7, one unaffiliated 1.8. So they, by any measure, should be somehow represented above any of the other organized parties. And, you know, I don't know how you do that, but we can leave that to their imagination.
Peter Stein.
I'm not sure I'm following all this conversation, but one thing I believe is if you've got Republican and Democrat and then someone else, it's critical who the someone else is. And I don't think that's the way of solving a problem. I think as bad as the present impasse is when you have just Republican and Democrat, I think anything anytime you break that parity, everyone will understand which side is going to win. And I don't think there's any point in doing it, frankly. But I'm not going to vote against it. But
On Dooley's amendment, can we restate it so everyone understands? This is the amendment to the amendment.
I think she's proposing to just put back in the words that were taken out on those lines.
I'm not hearing the clerk of the legislature.
Is that correct? I think I wouldn't blame our clerk if she's a little confused also. Dooley, is that correct?
With an example?
For example is all I had said, to add that in the language that was there.
All right. So I understand now? All right. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Amendment to the amendment. One, two. All those opposed? That's everyone. So that would be
11.
That fails. On the amendment now, as originally proposed, are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's unanimous. Now on the resolution, are we ready to vote on that? All those in favor of the resolution as amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Rich. That was a very good
thing. Nice work, Rich. Thank you, everybody. This is great. I'm sure they'll listen.
they're waiting with bated
breath.
I hope
you're right.
So going on with government operations resolutions?
Yes, resolution D.
Thank you. Also, I just wanted to, before we leave the ethics one, I got an email which I haven't been able to fully look at yet from Marsha Lynch, our public information officer, today, that the ethics report, that our ethics, this activity, what we just discussed, was some of the local media covered it. You said it was the biggest story, the longest story you'd ever seen them do? Okay, so sorry, I'm saying that badly, but I guess there's some local interest in this too. So I think you struck a nerve there, Rich. Okay, resolution D, budget. I would like to move resolution D, budget adjustment and appropriation from contingent fund, central translation services contract, county administration.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Any discussion on this one? Takes a short form roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean, Claiborne?
Yep.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Okay, it's 7:30. It's time for a break. We'll come back and finish the standing reports, and then we'll go into executive session.
Do you want to try to fly through?
Yes.
For the sake of our guests. And then take a break, and the staff can go.
All right. Is that okay with anybody? Everybody? We're suggesting that we not take a break.
Good, yeah.
That we push through.
Thank you.
All right. Jordy has it. Then let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee.
Let's see if I can do that flying thing. Yeah. All right. So Resolution E was pulled because for William George, the bond, they've got construction cost estimates in, and $2.7 million is not enough. They're planning to come back to the committee tomorrow with a $3.0 million request or bond request. So it'll be added to the PDEC agenda tomorrow at $3 million.
Martha, does that mean they've chosen a contractor to work with?
I've just told you all I know. So I could make something up. But.
Because there are other questions on there that they said don't know to. So if they now know that what it's going to cost, maybe they have someone.
Well, I presume they're going to talk about it tomorrow at committee, so I don't know. Tomorrow is the PDEC meeting at 3 o'clock in this room. A very important topic, the report out of the Energy and Economic Development Task Force. Charlie Troutman, the chair of the task force, and Martha Armstrong will both be there to sort of walk through the recommendations. The report has been online for, I guess, a week or two at tcad.org, and comments are welcome. If people can go to see the report there, and email comments to info@tcad.org, or mail them to TCAD. So all that stuff is on the website. Comments are due by May 27th, and tomorrow evening, as Carol said earlier, there's a public meeting about this. You know, basically the presentation that the committee will see tomorrow afternoon will be presented to the public tomorrow night at the Science Center, 5:30 p.m. So that's part of getting public input on this report. So the committee is doing that tomorrow. In addition, planning is going to be updating us on the housing needs assessment, the greenhouse gas emissions inventory, to name just a few topics that are going to be covered. So that's tomorrow at 3:00. And that's my report.
Questions, Carol?
Quick question. At the Science Center tomorrow night, is there going to be an opportunity for public comment or just the presentation?
No, most of the point is that it's public comment. It starts at 5:30. I'm not sure if there are going to be displays or anything like that at the last public meeting, but the presentation will take place at 6, and you'll see the presentation tomorrow is like 15 minutes long, so I assume the rest, it's billed till 7:30, so I assume that the rest is part of, conversation and questions, et cetera, from the public.
Thank you.
Okay, move on. Charter Review Committee, Dooley Kiefer's chair.
We meet a week from today at 3 p.m. Agenda is not yet set.
Questions? Thank you, Dooley. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis is chair.
Thank you very much, Mike. In all of your red folders, there's the EBC potential meeting dates in September and October for discussion of the budget that will come to us on September 6th. There are 6 EBC discussion meetings, 3 voting meetings, and I know the staff and Kathy Covert have worked to try to mitigate the conflicts between all the committees, and this is the first look, and it, please weigh in as soon as you take a look at this. I think it looks pretty good considering all the other meetings. Second thing.
Excuse me, Jim, weigh in to whom? You?
Well, Kath Covert, probably, and Kevin.
All right.
Right?
Probably.
Probably
to me.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Or me. And we have a regular scheduled meeting Monday, the 23rd at 4 p.m. And that concludes my report.
Questions for Jim? Thank you, Jim. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
We will be meeting in June.
You well, said to write, to fly through it. I'm done.
Does anyone have any questions about when she'll be meeting? Thank you. Old Library Committee has not met. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, chair.
We'll be meeting the day after tomorrow. And I expect it to be an interesting meeting.
Any questions about that? All right. You folks were serious. Minutes of previous meeting, May 3rd, 2016. Moved by Martha, seconded by Anna. Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. All those opposed? We have one opposed. I would like to have a motion to go into executive discussion, executive session, to discuss a personnel matter, a particular employee, and we would plan to come out of executive session, but not take any action after the session. So, is there a motion? Motion by Martha, seconded by Jim. All those in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. We'll go into executive session. We'll take a few minutes now to close down and let folks have a chance to leave.